It's times like these.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm ready for a show. Good morning, everybody. Welcome. It is Thursday morning. It's the 14th of January. It's 13 minutes past 9 o'clock, and we're pleased to have you with us. Hopefully, you've had a lovely morning so far. You've been caffeinated, if that's what you do, or if not, you've found your beverage of choice. And, you know, you're calm, you're relaxed, and you're ready to sit back and listen to us, whether maybe you can't sit back, maybe you're driving. I don't know what your daily routine is, but I'm just glad that we're part of it. I want to introduce everybody to you, and then we'll start talking. You'll respond, write us letters, tell us how you feel, and that's how we'll proceed over the next hour and 40 minutes. WAMC.org is where you go. It's panel at WAMC.org for our address to write to us, and we'd love to hear from you. We have a lot to talk about. It's been a busy day. It's been a busy week. It's been a busy month. It's been a busy 2021. And, not surprisingly, we have a lot to talk about. We'll get to it, and here we go. Alan Chartok joins us. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Hi, Chief. I'm okay, you know, 4:45 out there, looking for the bear, doing the walk, feeling cold. Dropped my glove, and I can't find it.
Oh, you know, yeah.
Yes. Please.
No, I was out last night. I took my dog to a class last night, and I dropped my scarf. I couldn't find my scarf. And it was sort of a sentimental thing that my mom had given me, but it's been located. But if you go out in the middle of the night, it's hard to find that stuff.
No, that's right. And it's been a busy morning because after that, then we did before the media project, we had the Capital Connection Blair Horner. The media project. Now this. Great.
All right.
All fun.
That's good. Man, this is like your fifth show of the day, and it's only 9 o'clock. So
that's
there you
right.
go.
Number five.
Well, it's wonderful to have you as always, sir.
And wonderful to be here.
Investigative reporter, UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
Good morning. How are you? I'm happy to be here. Thank you very much because I have to talk after yesterday.
Yeah, I know.
Right.
We only had a brief time yesterday, so it was it's nice to we only had like a 45-minute show yesterday with Mike and Rosemary and Alan, and so this gives everyone their chance to say more. And of course, we know a lot more now than we did then, don't we? We also welcome our good friend Jim Henler, and I'm trying to pull up his bio right now because I don't know it off the top of my head like I do with everybody else. But he is the Tetherless World Professor of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences at RPI and Director of the RPI-IBM Artificial Intelligence Research Collaboration. Good morning, Jim Henler. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good, Joe. You know, Alan, it's all that stuff you do that makes WAMC so great, so keep it up.
Whoa, that is so untypical. Somebody's saying something nice about me.
I'll fix it later.
But get it in now. And Siena College Professor of Comparative Politics, Vera Acarius Kelly joins us. Good morning, Vera. How are you?
Good morning. I'm actually pretty good, except for this underlying feeling that I always believe that something bad could be happening at any moment. And that's sort of, you know, this is a good mental health process here to be on the radio.
Yeah. You know, the reason that happens, Vera, is because something is bad to happen.
Exactly. Six more days of hell.
It just the hits keep coming, no matter what you do. Well, let us talk about what happened yesterday. It was quite a day. Historic by all accounts, and certainly one that is it's difficult to get your head around because the president was impeached for an unprecedented second time. We'll go down in history as the only president to be impeached by the House of Representatives not once but twice in 1 4-year term. Also, it was the most bipartisan impeachment ever, which I think bears noting. Even though there were only 10 Republicans who voted for this. And then on top of all of that, you have, well, the inevitable question of now what? Now what do we do? And where does this go? The Senate majority leader for the moment, Mitch McConnell, has said, well, this is off my watch. When the Senate meets on the 19th, I turn everything over to Chuck Schumer, then it's his ball game. And that's how we're looking at this now. There were some thoughts and maybe even hopes that McConnell would take this on, although I believe that everyone on this particular panel was highly skeptical of that. And meanwhile, we also have the continued threats to this country. We're finding out a lot more of what happened a week and a day ago in Washington with the insurrection and the riot, and as well, great concerns as to what could be happening in the future. So a lot to unpack. Alan, we'll begin with you and make our way around the room here. All right. Alan is not there.
Oh, no. Alan is here.
All right.
But he has to find his microphone.
Where?
He's looking for his glove.
Is he still looking for his glove? Where?
Well, if you really,
where could the microphone go?
If you really, the bear got him.
If you really want to know what happened, the phone rang. It was my audiology people telling me my ear had been repaired and I should show up and go there. I dropped the microphone. I dropped the hearing stuff, whatever you call those things, and I ran into the other room, and that's why Alan wasn't there.
Well, I did.
Or
this,
who cares?
No, I did this. I did a run up, but you know what's going on. So, what give us your thoughts?
Well, it is obvious that Donald Trump is not a happy camper, and to say the very least. I still can't figure out, and I really want to hear from everybody else on this, what people think was in his mind. Did he really think this was going to turn over the ship of state? There are many people who say, no, it was just to do this or do that. But I have a nagging feeling that he thought, based on his own narcissism and everything else, that people would say, yeah, you know, we can't let this guy go. He's our president and we're going to keep him here. And we saw the most incredible things. We saw AOC and others who really felt that their lives were in danger, because at least one Republican congresswoman had a picture of herself with a gun and saying she was going after Democrats, and she was going to do that. Now they put up gun things. They put up metal detectors, and the Republicans are complaining about the metal detectors crimping their style. It's just an extraordinary time in America, and let me tell you, an awful lot of things are happening now. Twitter takes them down. Social media takes the president down. Why? Well, nobody likes to take anybody down. But here was the guy who was threatening to replace the democratic values of this country with a would-be dictator. If not now, when?
Well, you take your good news where you can get it. But I, reading the headline that for whatever reason, Trump isn't taking Rudy Giuliani's calls anymore and they're blocked, I find that amusing. Jim Hamilton.
Is there anybody that Trump hasn't turned on? Anyone?
No. They say
McConnell or anybody else?
They say he's very isolated in the White House. So there you go. Just left with the voices in your head. Jim Handler, go ahead.
Oh, gosh. My more conservative friends told me to keep an eye on Trump at the beginning because he was going to make history. I'm not sure this is what they had in mind. It really has been staggering. And, sort of the political junkie in me is just looking at this from a real politics point of view with no hint of where this goes or how it plays out, whether it's going to help or hurt each party and things like that. But I think, sort of the citizen in me is looking at this saying, the combination of just the outrage and seeing that bear out so fast versus the kind of craziness we were hearing from the Republicans yesterday who were defending him. There was a middle group who were sort of saying, okay, look, we didn't like what he did, but maybe impeachment's wrong. But then there were these crazies who were, you're trying to steal the election still. So I don't know. This country is going to take a lot of work to get back in shape. And I was kind of hoping after the election and before the inauguration that we would, you know, we'd see some outrage, but I didn't think we'd see this kind of craziness that's going to make it really hard for anything to change in a big way over the next few years. We'll see a lot of good legislation happen, but
yeah.
The split in the country is going to be really hard to heal.
Vera.
Yeah, I mean, along those same lines, I think the national security question is foremost on my mind this week, actually, in terms of warnings and concerns. And I do understand that, you know, some representatives were really fearful, especially if it's the first time that they're encountering a threat to themselves or to their families. I'm just mentioning this as something that I remembered based on my own experience. I did a translation of an article that was posted on the internet about the Armenian genocide as a faculty at Siena. And as soon as it was posted, just an hour later, I received internet-based threats that called me a viper whose head should be cut off and a birthing agent of evil because I had translated something from German into English about the Armenian genocide and Turkish nationalists were targeting me. And I needed, you know, campus security and, you know, I got a panic button. And so that experience, I think, made me aware of the kinds of things that you might feel if on the internet there are direct threats against you. And, you know, these are at a much higher level, of course, the intensity, perhaps, and the credibility of those threats against some of the Congress people. So I feel for them because I think that's a really scary moment where you don't only fear for yourself in the coming months or who knows how long this takes, and for your family as well, and the security threat that's out there when you serve in Congress. So this is something that I think about and I'm empathetic about. So just something else to throw in the mix.
Indeed. Rosemary Armeo.
Okay, so I want to talk about Mitch McConnell, who, again, I think proved himself to be the master politician in Washington, even above my beloved Nancy Pelosi. He has managed to throw out doubts and criticism of Trump, who he has no love for, and yet he won't take up the impeachment right away. At first, that annoyed me because I think you could impeach him, could have done it, held a trial yesterday if he had wanted to. But in fact, I think that will work in favor of a more bipartisan impeachment. We are seeing every day more and more information come out, more evidence of the coordinated attack, the violence of the attack. That is not going to help Donald Trump. So I'm happy about that. And it won't fall on his watch. Number two, a second advantage, it'll fall on Schumer's. And number three, it's going to mess up Biden, who wants a very fast-paced and ambitious plan to stimulate the economy and stop coronavirus. And this is not going to make it easier for him. So he accomplished, again, with one little move, being saying, oh, my hands are tied. We can't do it until after Trump is out. He accomplished three goals. That's really masterful. The second thing I want to talk about is that there's more action needed. Congress's work is not done. I think that action needs to be taken in the Senate against Hawley and Cruz at the very least, and in the House against Stefanik and others who continue to spread the big lie. Third is that Adam Schiff, I know, is working on this, and I hope he keeps his eye on the ball, which is that major reforms are needed to repair rents in tradition and constitution that Trump showed up. Impeachment is now in shreds. Is there and should there be rules on when you can do it and how you can do it and what's a fast versus a regulation time impeachment? These are questions we've never had to face before, but we do because people have watched Trump and there will be others more competent who will follow him. The emoluments clause is still not solved. Trump violated that from day one. So that conservative thing about how Democrats wanted to impeach him from day one, we did. And it's true and we should have because he was violating the Constitution, in our view, since day one. And we've never resolved that. That needs to be done. I love Letitia James in New York. I hope other attorney generals are following her her model of putting out a warning today saying, do not mess with the Capitol on Inauguration Day or you will be prosecuted. I think there's a real imminent danger of more violence in the next week. So there's lots still wrong. The latest thing I saw is a poll, which, of course, I don't put much faith in, but it shows still nearly 60% of Republicans approve of Trump in the past week. How the heck do you do that? And they still see him as the most viable candidate for them in 2024. Frightening. I hope that it's just defiance or saying, I'm not going to give pollsters the satisfaction of saying he did a bad job. But I find that evidence of what Jim was talking about, a lasting and bruising division in this country.
Just have about a minute, Alan.
Well, no, I think Rosemary has set it up quite nicely. The problem here is the balance between taking away Trump's rights and at some point in the future having somebody come up and say, okay, you did it to Trump, now we're going to do it to you. But I agree with Rosemary. This is such a terrible time in America. This is a time when fascism was rearing its ugly head and something dramatic and important had to be done. And I do think this is the time to do it.
Do you think when we look at passing this on now and what happens, I want to get back to it, Rosemary, to your point about that this actually may work out the best, this schedule. So in a minute, and we can certainly come back to it after the break, but how do you see it rolling out in the best case scenario for its rollout?
The best scenario is that the minute that Biden is in office and Schumer is in his office, we take up a trial that will have evidence. It will answer. If you noticed yesterday, the Republicans speaking against impeachment never said, oh, what he did was just fine. Although there are weirdos all over the internet saying that Trump didn't do anything wrong. It was a perfectly appropriate speech. Baloney.
15 seconds.
But what the representatives were saying was that we didn't follow procedure. So now there's time to follow procedure. And I think that does not bode well for Trump.
We'll hold there. We'll be right back right after this. Thank you. Dave Grohl of the Foo Fighters turns 52 years old today. I tell you that because usually when we play music, it's because the artist is dead. Dave Grohl is not. He is very much alive. He's 52 years old. Hey, Rosemary, remember when you and I were in the audience for Colbert and Dave Grohl played the drums right in front of us?
I do. That was so exciting. Let's do it again.
Well, if there's ever a studio audience, who knows? Maybe we can. Yeah, Dave Grohl was on with his mom. That was a fun day in the city. All right. Welcome back to the program. Alan, Rosemary, Jim Henler, and Vera Karius-Kelly, and we're thrilled to have you. Panel at WAMC.org. All right. Let's go back to what we've been talking about here. Does anybody want to pick up on what Rosemary said right before the break? All right.
You know,
seems
I think
like
there's
a... Yo, please, go ahead.
Go ahead, Jim.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, I think the thing that's playing out in a very complicated way that drives me crazy is, you know, we look at what happened on the Capitol and we see rioters and insurgents, things like that. And you have to realize that, you know, a lot of these Republicans are looking out there and seeing voters. And it's the craziness of that. You know, I'm with Rosemary. You know, how does that support for Trump stay there? I can imagine a 20%, 30% lunatic fringe, but that there's still a majority of the party. You know, Liz Cheney was just critiqued completely by you know, her state politicians because they still see this crowd as their voters. And it just... You know, I wish I could get inside that head and understand it. But, you know, it's like these horrible things are playing out and they're like, no big deal.
Liz Cheney has just done the right thing. You know,
absolutely. She's the profile and courage you've been calling for.
She is from a political standpoint. You know, probably didn't make the right decision in terms of following her people. Her 60-70%. I heard 70. Rosemary mentioned 60% of the Republicans still sticking with him. But she did what's right, and history will so record her. And of course, she is a representative from the Bush administration, and they hate Trump's guts.
Yeah.
So that's clear that that's part of what's going on.
Also, don't you think, Alan, that she's trying to save the Republican Party? I mean, this is sort of like she's standing up for specific values, for ideas that she supports in terms of, you know, the traditional Republican core, and she's feeling her party was hijacked, and she's trying to save the rump to re-energize certain values for the future.
Which is interesting because it is exactly what McConnell said. So you got to figure that the Bushes and the McConnellites are sort of on the same side. But, of course, McConnell, wanting to preserve his leadership, has always been terrible.
The most interesting thing about Liz Cheney to me was that she responded naturally to insults and just barbarous treatment at the hands of Donald Trump, unlike Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz, who have responded to his lies and insults with sucking up to him. She behaved in the normal way. I don't know if that's heroic or not, but it certainly seems more normal.
Well, I think she has a core belief system that she really sticks with, whereas those that continue to support Trump basically go wherever they feel their political future might be supported. I mean, it's quite pathetic, to be honest, that they don't stick with a belief structure, but just feel out where they might have a future in politics instead of standing up for what is just, what is right, what is legal. I mean, it's truly disturbing to see some of those, you know, some of the wiggle space that some of these Republican representatives and senators represent, even though they know exactly well, based on their educational background, that what they're supporting is elements of insurrection and a violent mob.
Jim?
Do you remember the good old days when we thought, oh, Trump will surely do something and his followers will see the light. They'll realize how bad he is. Remember those days?
Yeah, that is not going to happen.
That's a long time ago, yeah.
Well, because it is what's left over. I've said it again and again. What's left over from the Civil War, the same people who were on that Southern side, who supported slavery, who supported Jim Crow afterwards, these are the heir apparents, no question about it in my mind.
We have letters. Let's get to those. And this is one that I've been wondering about, too, and I think it's interesting. So here we go. Maybe the panel knows an answer to this, which is, why was the president and other speakers behind bulletproof glass at the January 6th Trump event on the Mall and not, to my knowledge, behind one at other Trump events such as the MAGA rallies? Was the executive branch and or Secret Service aware of a greater danger from this assembled crowd than would have been the case for other crowds? Anyone?
I have no idea.
It seems like a good point, though. Michael writes to us and says, what really scares me right now is this, these dangerous nut jobs out there that Trump has activated are no longer in control in any way. They are now not just against Democrats or liberals. They just want to annihilate the government. Trump had handlers who forced him to make a video asking for peace. The crowd that stormed the Capitol couldn't care less. I fear armed guards will now be a fixture at state and federal offices. Well done, Mr. President. America is indeed looking great again.
Yeah, you know, I'd respond to that by sort of channeling my inner Malcolm Nance, but there are some real warnings out there. There are some real scary things happening. You know, it's still at this point been a fairly quiet warning, but FBI has put out things. So local Jewish organizations, a lot of the minority population, Black and Latino groups, that are located in state capitals, have been warned to be on the alert this weekend to, you know, have extra security to try to keep people at home. You know, they're expecting violence, potential violence in all 50 state capitals. And, you know, as you said, as the writer said, the, you know, that's they don't seem to care whether the people in power at the moment in that Capitol building are Democrat or Republican. It's an anti-government, you know, you threw out our guy and we're rebelling. And I think that's going to be a scary movement that we're going to have to deal with. And it's going to take significant effort and it's going to take real will on the part of agencies that at the moment have still not been willing to consider white supremacy a real threat. And I'm hoping this will be a wake-up moment for some of them.
Alan?
Well, you're making such good points, Jim. But what, you know, I'm thinking, the FBI has made many arrests now. These arrests are, you know, some of these people are facing 20, 30 years in jail. We don't know what the President of the United States has planned for these 6 days. A blanket pardon for all those people who protested is one possibility, but we are talking about 5 deaths. So that means the guy becomes complicit in murder, and I'm sure to some degree the people around him are warning him, you know, about that. And in the last 6 days, he's got to attend to the other business of pardoning himself and his kids and their, and, you know, Rudy Giuliani and the others. By the way, the same Rudy Giuliani who he won't answer his calls now, but who said publicly he doesn't dare turn on me, meaning, you know, I've got an awful lot on him. So, you know, I don't know, but I think we have to watch the pardon process very carefully now.
Yeah, I think I agree with Alan. The whole question about the pardons is going to be at the center. I don't even think that Trump is worried about the protester, the mob, the assailants, the insurrection participants. You know, that for him is not even at the center anymore. He's so self-absorbed. He worries about himself, so a self-pardon I would expect, and for the inner core of his family. I don't think we can expect much of anything else, to be honest. He is his inner circle is so small.
So what happens when it gets to the Supreme Court and those people have to answer whether he can pardon himself?
Yeah, well, that'll be an interesting sort of process. I was listening to an interview with Lawrence Tribe yesterday, the
Harvard.
Really well-known, you know, constitutional scholar at Harvard. And he was making arguments that the, you know, obviously that this process of self-pardoning is rather questionable. But, you know, he believes that this will not go successfully for Trump and his family.
Rather questionable is one thing to say. You know, that doesn't mean much. In the end, who holds up the hands on that court? And I'm sure that, for example, Alito and Thomas, as they always have, will be two of the hands that say he can do anything he wants. And then the others, you know, I mean, it's a lot less defined than some of the other things that this court has properly ruled on against Trump. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, also some of these issues about
Jim and then Rosemary, go ahead. No, we'll take
I was just going to say some of these issues about whether somebody can be impeached after office, whether they can be stripped of the perks and things like that, all of which is playing out. I think those things are going to end up at the Supreme Court also. And I think the fact that Trump owns this court, that's one of the places you'll see it play out.
Rosemary?
Yeah, I have given up all hope of justice for Trump. I think you're right. He is an expert at delaying tactics. And Jim is right. The first issue is not whether he can pardon himself, but whether he can be impeached after he's left office. Mm-hmm. And that will go, he'll push that all the way to the Supreme Court. And he'll do this with every step of the way. It will be years. We may be dead before it's all resolved. But what is most important, and I think he'll pardon everybody. I think you're wrong. He sees those people who supported him as his power base, you know, and he loves them. You're special people. We love you. And I think he will do mass pardons. He also loves pardoning people. And he also loves that it will stick it to all of us who hate to see that. So I think that I am bracing this week for total outrage. Alan, you said it. He knows no bottom, and he's got a whole week to wreak havoc with us, and I believe that he will, and that mostly it will stick. Instead, what we have to be concentrating on are ethics law that don't rely on shaming, that there's actual real penalties for conflicts of interest and blatant violations that we've seen from Trump. And we need to see real work in the Congress on their investigative powers, making that stick, on impeachment, on what parts of the Constitution that never got used before really mean and how you enforce it. And I don't know that there's time to do that, to tell you the truth. If you ask me to prioritize what's more important, that or getting the economy straight and infrastructure and, of course, COVID, I agree. It's not that important. And so, once again, it'll be kicked down the road. And in 2024, we'll probably still be talking about the Electoral College and other reforms needed.
Let's take
Rosemary, I wanted to give you a quick note of maybe a little bit of hope, because I'm a believer in the fact that Trump is mostly focused right now on saving economic his own economic future and opportunity. And I am sort of thinking along the lines of Al Capone at this moment, because there might be a sliver of justice, because conservative business interests are moving away from him. And Deutsche Bank, the slimiest of all banks in the entire world, has decided not to collaborate and work with Trump anymore and hand over all the documentation to whoever, you know, including the state of New York, requests details on Trump's financial transactions. So there may be a sliver of hope in the future.
Let's take a break. When we come back,
you're right about that.
with that agreement, I'm going to take a break.
Poor Joe.
We'll get. I promise we'll come back and we can talk more. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel for this Thursday morning, the 14th of January, 9:49. And we welcome a great panel: Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Jim Henler, and Vera Acarius Kelly. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We have many letters. We'll get to as many as we can in the next few minutes, right before the top of the hour break. Let's see. The Michael writes that, to Alan's point regarding the leftover Southern Rebellion people, the modern interpretation, of course, is that the 2009-2010 Tea Party movement, Donald Trump didn't create it, and lack of FCC regulation certainly allowed it to be perpetuated, but he certainly gave it a voice, encouragement, and amplification. We go to, let's see, a nice letter from Jennifer, who says, "Thank you, panel, for your work over the last 4 years helping us understand these turbulent times. Please know that the Constitution does not make any mention about impeaching a president who is not an incumbent. The Senate Republicans will therefore take this to the courts, including the Supreme Court. It will be a mess. McConnell knows this." We now go to Joe, who says, "I'm 63, I'm fairly well-educated, well-read, well-informed, and politically savvy. However, pardon my ignorance, but I've never heard of the word foment until last week. When did it become cool for the media to use and overuse that softer synonym for incite, the specific verb the Constitution uses? If I had been playing a foment drinking game, I'd be drunk until COVID is in the rearview mirror." A great
point. Foment is a perfectly good verb, but the media should be using verbs that we understand, and I would include indict and impeach with that. People don't really know what that means. But to go back to the other letter, the Constitution does indeed not mention impeachment after they left office. However, in the 200 years or so of our republic, we have impeached officials after they've left office. There's precedent for this. Not a president before, but certainly other high-ranking federal officials. So there's no reason to think that that's a reason the court has to rule against this procedure. Will it be a mess and will be carried on in extremes in the court? Yes.
But there's still two separate things to vote on. And this is a question, too, as if they're taken separately, they will be taken separately. But what will the outcome be? One is you impeach President Trump if the Senate indicts and impeaches him. And then the second is a separate vote that he can ever run for office again. Does anybody see a split in that?
Oh, yes. I think a split for sure, because what Republican, except for the fringe, does wants Trump to run for office again? I mean, they're trying to cleanse the party now, at least the ones that are sort of, you know, traditional Republicans, Bush Republicans, like Liz Cheney, and people that are trying. I mean, they know the Republican Party cannot win elections unless they have ideas or proposals that people can follow them around. They can't just be anti-Biden. This does not work. So what they need to do is ensure to get rid of the idea that Trump could run for public office again, so that a more successful traditionalist kind of Republican slate of candidates can emerge and cleanse the party.
That's to which I say,
I think
to,
they want to.
Mm-hmm. Alan?
To which I say, easier said than done. You know, you got the courts to go through. It's anti-American to tell somebody that they can't run for office unless they're a convicted felon. Yes, please go ahead, Jim.
Well, I was just going to say, Alan, except for one interesting piece of this that hasn't gotten the visibility it needs, which is the 14th Amendment, Section 3, right, what's called the disqualification mm-hmm. clause of Equal Rights Amendment. But the basically it says that if you've been convicted of essentially insurrection or rebellion, then you can be denied any chance to come back. And the only way this could be removed, so it would only take a majority vote of Congress to impose this. It requires a 2/3 vote to remove it. So that becomes a very interesting aspect of this if Congress decides to go that way. But it requires that insurrection vote, which is,
right,
you know, which is where this current statement mm-hmm. of what the article of impeachment is. So if it's denied in the Senate, it's very unclear what happens at that. At least that stays around as a possible way to do some of this.
I'll stick with the last
leaving
part.
One thing out, Jim, and that's that he could, after he leaves the White House this next week, he's subject to actual prosecution by people in the states, not pardon yes. himself from anything federal.
Well, there's that.
So
yeah, that's that too. But
too.
That,
yeah.
But in theory, you could still go to jail in New York and run for president in D.C.
Oh, what a tangled web we weave. Let's see. We get this from Ray, who says, why are so many U.S. religious leaders silent in responding to the horrific January 6th assault on our Capitol? They clearly have a moral responsibility to make their voices heard, and they may well be able to make a difference for future potential attacks. No? Question mark? Asks Ray. Anyone who wants that one? Anyone? Okay. Trump, the narcissistic fool, saved the biggest lie for last, and it has led to the ruin of the Trump brand. Financial support, including Deutsche Bank, have abandoned him. Many GOP politicians have abandoned him. He could have simply accepted his election loss and used his last 2 months in office to solidify his legacy amongst his loyal, albeit flawed, base. This reinforces the lessons we already know. It never pays to lie. I wonder who Trump is now blaming for the lousy advice he got to lie about the election. Well, apparently it's Rudy Giuliani, among others. But thank you, Harry, for that note. We go to...
So, Joe, can I work in a little bit about Giuliani? While
sure. Yeah.
So I don't know if you saw the article, but apparently Rudy Giuliani on January 7th, while the Capitol was trying to get back into order after all the violence and things, called what he thought was Tommy Tuberville's phone to mm-hmm. basically harass right. him into, you know, saying vote against every single state, you know, delay, mm-hmm. delay, do anything you can to hold this for a few more days. You know, the recording of it is out there. I heard some of it last night on CNN and MSNBC. But mm-hmm. the interesting thing about it was, of course, that Giuliani called the wrong number and left it on a different senator's phone call who shared it with the newspapers. But you know, so again, the competence of Giuliani. But yeah, I mean, it was interesting, you know, so here, while all this violence is going on and cops are getting killed, Giuliani is calling and saying, delay, delay, delay. I mean, it's just amazing.
Well, and there's been,
I mean, there is also this effort to disbar Giuliani by, hundreds of, you know, law students, you know, basically saying this is just despicable. His behavior indicates gross incompetence and, disloyalty to the constitutional basic understanding of what U.S. law should look like.
But then he'd be left with Alan Dershowitz, right?
Yes. We'll see what Alan Dershowitz does.
Charles writes, has there been a poll to see the proportion of Republicans across the nation who wish to overthrow the will of the American people? Let's see. Okay.
That kind of wording would not get you a very accurate poll. Because everyone would say no to that. They think the will of the American people is Trump.
Let's see. We go to Gus, who writes, I love you, panel, but please keep your terminologies clear. Trump has been impeached. That's not in question. Yes. Whether he can be tried, that might be an issue SCOTUS would weigh in on. Second question, can a pardon be given to unnamed parties, a general absolution? Sounds like something only a cleric can do.
I mean, a pardon, you have to be convicted or accused, at least. I mean, to have a pardon be effective, you have to be convicted of a crime or have admitted to a crime. So
no, that's just wrong. That's not right.
Can generally pardon even, well, if you can pardon somebody, you have to then admit to having done something wrong.
No, you do not. No, you do not.
You can just Richard be pardoned Nixon. For whatever Nixon. Might be... indicated
yes,
in the future?
All crimes they have committed in the past. You can't go forward, but you can go backward. For all crimes that he committed during his service. That happened with Richard Nixon. There was no admission of guilt. There was no charge.
Right. Although,
and that was upheld.
Yeah, what were you going to say, Jim?
Sorry, I was going to say, yeah, it's the upheld part that's critical. Yeah. So, you know, it can... So, for example, if Trump did a self-pardon... You can't basically go to court and say he shouldn't have been allowed to do that. What happens is the first time he's accused of something and tries to claim that the pardon is in effect, that's when it gets would get adjudicated.
All right.
It is complicated.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your thoughts, panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll return right after this.
Everything could ever feel this real forever. If anything could ever be this good again. The only thing I'll ever ask of you, you gotta promise not to stop when I say when. She sang.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. 8 minutes past 10 o'clock. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Jim Hendler, and Vera Acarius Kelly. And we welcome your letters. So let's see. Leslie writes, to add to Vera's comments, I've read that Trump's biggest concern right now is the damage to his brand and the pulling away from his organizations like the PGA. Of course, he wasn't very forward thinking to not recognize this could happen. That from Leslie. We also go, let's see here. I have a dear friend that is down the QAnon rabbit hole and may never come up. They don't only hate Democrats, they hate the mainstream Republicans too, writes Rebecca. All rational politicians are corrupt child molesters who need to be removed and tried for their crimes. They also call Trump God Emperor of the United States. I'll allow that to sit in the air for a moment. Go ahead, Jim.
So I wish I could refute that or deny it, but in fact, that's absolutely true. The QAnon stuff is phenomenal. There was an interesting article in the Washington Post yesterday, a short article that sums up a lot of what I've learned, you know, sort of crawling the deep web and on some of the things I've been involved in, DHS and others, before they got essentially taken, removed from being allowed to do a lot of this stuff. But it's scary. And, you know, what's interesting is the way a big conspiracy theory like that works is you just get people to buy into some little part of it, and then they grow out to grow the whole thing. And QAnon was brilliant in putting out tentacles all over the place. So I saw a story where they interviewed each individual, you know, they took like the 10 most important claims of QAnon, and they asked people who were real big followers, you know, do you believe this? And almost all of them said, no, but I believe this other one. So in a sense, what you see is that they've put out just a lot of different things to hook people in, and then those people get associated with this much bigger community, and that's how this spreads. Mm-hmm. But some of the things out there are just scarily insane, and you know, that's not the worst of it. And a lot of that deep core that, you know, this isn't the 60% of Republican, but this is a deep core. But, you know, you have two GOP representatives now who mm-hmm. are on the record QAnon advocates, you know, really yeah. do believe some of this stuff. I mean, you know, you have people in Congress who believe that their colleagues eat babies. I mean, that's how insane this has become.
So I wanted to add to exactly what Jim said. There's an international component because QAnon has made inroads in Germany. And very recently, Chancellor Angela Merkel was accused of having been part of an underground pedophilia, child eating and blood drinking circle, which is exactly what was an accusation against Hillary Clinton and the kind of circles that are swirling around in this country. So QAnon is operating globally, and they're looking for, you know, opportunities to find followers and supporters in lots of different societies, not just in the United States, I wanted to add.
And it's worth noting that some of these things that sound crazy, like, you know, the eating of babies and the pedophilia and things like that.
They don't sound crazy. They're
actually
crazy.
They yeah, are go crazy. Ahead. But they relate to tropes that have been around for a very long time. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the anti-Semitic trope that Jews were killing and using the blood of babies to bake matzah on Passover has been around since literally the year hundreds. Right. I mean, for thousands mm-hmm. of years, this is and the same thing. The Nazis argued that the gypsies were doing this. And you can just go back through history. Every 100 or 200 years, this came up again during the Inquisition. Right. So it's and there's a lot of other memes like that. I just could use that one example. But these conspiracies that QAnon has been built off of these existing long term things. And that's part mm-hmm. of what makes it so pernicious and so difficult to kill off.
And wait yeah, until Trump.
Really correct. I mean,
I'm sorry, Rosemary.
Just laying.
Rosemary, go ahead.
I was going to say, wait until Trump pardons Maxine Gillane, and that will further the idea. The whole Jeffrey Epstein pedophilia thing is all tied into this too. It makes it seem even more believable. And I'm hoping that the two crazy QAnon people in Congress will be among those ousted if we have a reform of Congress. The woman from Colorado, Lauren Boebert, is that how you say her name, caused a stir yesterday by bringing her Glock into the chambers mm-hmm. when they were debating,
like
and she repulsed Capitol Police trying to prevent that. It's just ridiculous. Okay, I have to go before my sense yep. of doom overcomes me again.
We got this one. This is for Alan from Ellen, who says, "Dear wonderful panel, is it possible that Trump is sitting in his office thinking there's a chance his quote-unquote army will still quote-unquote fight for him on January 17th and or the 20th and somehow restore him to office?
The degree of anger, fear, and delusion we've seen so far makes me wonder. Thank you for helping us get through this endless last 2 weeks before a new day dawns, however dimly. It can't come soon enough.
I, in fact, love that letter because it is something I've been struggling with all along. There are many people who believe that Trump knows what he's doing and is doing it purposely and manipulative. And then there are people who believe that he absolutely thinks that this is what is at stake here, that he can be restored, that this mob that went up there would restore him, and that the American people would rise up as one and work to get him to stay as president. The answer is, I don't know. All along, I thought I was on the manipulative side. But I'm beginning to think this crazy man may really believe his own stuff. Starting with S stuff.
So can I just say something else? And I don't know how to exactly express this concern, but I have a sense that a perhaps very small percentage within law enforcement, my agency might actually support Trump. And I'm quite concerned about that.
Well, we know that to be true. We know that to be true. We know that because there were people in there who were showing their badges and doing this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And we know, I mean, there are some great people in police work, no question. I worked with them in the New York City Police Department when I was educational advisor to the commissioner. But I can tell you, there's some wonderful and progressive and decent people. But I can tell you that people who get attracted to the military, people who get attracted to police work, are often, certainly not always, sympathetic to a more militaristic right-wing view of life.
I think we're soft-pedaling it. There's no information that it's a small percentage.
We don't know. That's correct.
To racist ideas. Right. Police sympathetic to racist ideas, including the KKK, have been a persistent problem in this country, and it's part of the reason that Black Lives Matter has had hit such resonance, because we know it. And I think it's one of the positives that might come out of this horribleness, is that we're going to look closer now at who's in our police forces and their biases and prejudices.
As always, interesting, Rosemary.
And, you know, I wanted to say that because obviously in Germany, this is a big topic at the moment, where they're taking elite police units apart for their conspiratorial, outlook and collaboration with anti-Semitic and racist organizations.
Right.
And, this is a major topic in a number of countries, and it has arrived now in the United States, to look at, for example, the Capitol Police. And figure out who was loyal and who was not. This is really quite scary, right?
Yes. Let's get back to letters. Alan, I owe you one. Denise says, I'm confused. If the rioters have not yet been charged and convicted of their crimes yet, how can Trump pardon them? Thank you for all you do. Love listening and thinking along with you.
Well, we've already discussed that. You can blanket pardon people. That's, as Rosemary quite correctly pointed out, and as I was saying, in the Nixon case, there weren't specific things that he did. He was just given a blanket pardon by Ford, who, by the way, lost the election because of it.
Let's see. We have a few minutes, and I want to get to more letters. We have many, so I want to get to those, and then we'll go to some new topics after the break. Let's see. Luke is taking us to task, saying, I had to pull over when I heard you say 99% of Americans are appalled. This is wrong. According to Forbes, 56% of Republicans believe in QAnon and have infiltrated police forces all across the country. See the head of the NYPD union give interviews with QAnon coffee cup. They supported this riot, protesting American radicalization just doesn't exist. Is exactly what brought us to this point, and that from Luke. Okay.
You know what I love, Joe? We are a panel. A panel. That's different people with different ideas. Different people say different things. Sometimes, somebody does something which is a little bit, extensive of the point, as in this case. But I was having a conversation with a guy just yesterday who wants to hold everybody on the panel responsible for everything that everybody else said. And that cannot be. Why would you have a panel if that were the case?
Yeah. The idea is to have a
robust.
Yes. And various viewpoints.
That's right.
Eileen says, just heard a story. Okay. That's actually not. That's something else. What do you think of the idea, writes Robert, that no matter what humans try to do to control this kind of social madness, it's a direct effect of density-induced mental illness. Just wondering.
What's density-induced mental illness?
I don't know why I'm asking Jim if he knows what this is about, but I am, so.
I don't, though.
Density, okay.
I'm not sure.
Mental illness, I mean, that would mean every country with a high density. What? Would be
or every city.
I'm not sure I understand it.
Okay.
Any urban environment?
Yeah, yeah. Well, or every city. Well,
I don't know. Well, so I just read it because I saw the word rats. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, so again, the psychological effect, I know. I just wasn't sure how it applies. So when you put rats in a cage and put more of them in, you start to get some really bad behaviors. And again, there's a lot of literature on this, and most of it is still...
A lot of litters. Yeah.
No, I mean, you get rats, you know, eating each other and killing each other. And so there is a strain of belief that urban density leads to some of these, but the direct parallel between them is hard. But the thing is, we're not seeing this play out just in urban densities. You know, it's not like this is citified violence. You're seeing, you know, I mean, the top Trump people are survivalists out in, you know, the crazy side is the survivalists out in very rural places and
right.
things like that. So I mean, there is a phenomena there. It's unclear whether that phenomena applies to people, and it's less clear to me whether that phenomena explains things. But I think the growth in hatred, the splitting, a lot of these things are phenomena that Trump has taken advantage of and grown, and we've talked about that often on the show, and Alan has made a very persuasive case for this. So, you know, again, I think it's very clear we're seeing that every violent tendency that was out there, he's exploited, and now we're seeing that play out.
Rosemary, go ahead.
But of course, if the premise is correct, then you would see a pro-Trump New York City, for example. Because, you know, it is kind of crazy when people support him.
Joan wants to know, Rosemary, what should be done about the Congress members who allegedly provided the location of Nancy Pelosi's office to rioters during the insurrection?
Mm-hmm.
Criminal prosecution, referral to the Ethics Committee, and expulsion possible.
So as an investigative reporter, what do we not know about that right now?
We don't know lots of stuff about it. It's one person, as I understand it, who has another member of Congress who said, I saw them do it. And also one organizer for Proud Boys named the three people. He named them in speaking to police. So that's you have two accusers. We've not spoken to the congressman involved. Did they know when they were showing these people around that their intention the next day was to come in and take over? Or were these just people who said, we're in town for a protest and we'd love to see Congress. Can you show us around? We don't know intent either. So there's a lot to be done. It is shocking on the face of it, but lots of the deeper exploration of what was going on. What exactly did they show them? Did they show them more than just public areas of the building that any tourist could see? We don't know.
Put another way, they would on Law and Order, doing, doing. You know, you got to figure that somebody, in order to avoid 20 years in jail, if it's true, is going to say, yeah, that was the arrangement with the congressperson.
Right.
Yeah,
that's great. Yeah,
right.
Great point.
Yeah.
Although, what, Jim?
I was going to say, the one I was listening to some stories about this last night, and I was kind of also saying some of the things that Rosemary just said, until it was pointed out that because of COVID, the tours have been suspended and, you know, there have been virtually nothing offered for you know, you weren't allowed to bring your constituents in. So this was not just, you know, some folks from my home state were showing up and I wanted to show them around. This was a willful you know, denial of some Capitol rule. So that's not the same as saying they were conspiring, but there were definitely some complexities here.
Yeah, right.
I mean, also, you can see my point.
Hold on. Go ahead, Rosemary, and then Vera. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I don't. I want to hear what Vera has to say, but you can see my point that we don't know whether it really was it a violation of a little rule. That's not the same as bringing in a co-conspirator of a mob that's planning to. We need to know the roots. Those are two really violently different things. I got these guys, you know, and I really like them. I just want to show them around. No harm done with war masks. That's a violation of the rules, and it's minor. That's way, way different than what I think looks to be like a felony charge if the accusation proves completely true.
And you need testimony to make sure that, you know.
Right.
People believe that. Yeah.
Vera?
Well, in light of this, I just wanted to remind everybody of the incredible story of the African-American Capitol Police person who basically redirected mob terrorist attackers away from the Senate space where people were hiding, right? I mean, that took a lot of courage to be by yourself and have this mob come towards you and then use yourself as sort of the target and redirect this mob away from the hallway where, you know, senators were hiding, especially, you know, he was aware of Democratic senators that were there fearing for their lives. So, I mean, this is incredible courage, right?
And just to be clear, by redirect.
When you take all that into consideration, there has to be a very careful investigation into who led those tours, if those tours were in fact offered not only to sort of undermine general rules, which we obviously see all the time, COVID-related and now those that carry weapons, but, you know, in general, was this a large conspiratorial effort and who participated?
That's the question.
Let's also remember that we had police officers who did an incredible job.
That's the question.
Jim, you want to make to clarify?
I just wanted to say that, you know, just for those who aren't familiar with the story, this officer, it wasn't like a passive, you know, don't go here, go there. It was, you know, very active. He had to, he was literally fighting off these people. It was quite an act of courage.
And remember that, yes, it was. And remember that every time you have one of these things, we need a hero, and we make heroes out of all kinds of people who just did good things, and, you know, that's what's happening here, I think.
Let's go to we have just a minute or so before we go over to our last break of the morning, and then we'll come back and take on some other topics here. Let's see. Melinda says that tours have been closed since March for COVID, so no way was any of that appropriate or okay. I think Rosemary made that point. It's, you know, kind of a minor thing to a major thing in the comparison. Let's see. We said, is it not a federal crime for Madison Cawthorn to have been carrying a firearm in the Capitol on the 6th? That from Chris from South Hadley. I guess, but this is happening, right? I mean, there have been guns in the Capitol, which is why we now have the security screening going into the chamber, because Democratic members were upset that their Republican colleagues were packing heat. Daniel writes, I'm not necessarily anti-gun, but I do have concerns about what an outcome would be with many private individuals with firearms in a closed, highly volatile environment, as we saw last week. If one person feels sufficiently threatened by anyone, they fire. This gets misinterpreted by some as authority firing on protesters, so they fire back and on like gasoline on a fire. This isn't about the guns, but the individual stress and response levels of the people with the guns, at least with limiting their possession to, hopefully, trained professional individuals. This would limit, though not stop, the potential for escalating situations like that. That from Daniel.
You know, Joe, we're going to get into this whole gun thing. The Supreme Court of the United States says every American can carry, you know, I mean, with some restrictions, but every American can carry. Now we say, okay, but in the Congress, you shouldn't be allowed to bring a gun in. But what about my house? What about somebody who's walking around here? I mean, sooner or later, there has to be a rethinking of this gun thing. And if you want to write me a letter, go ahead.
We may even read it on the air. We're going to take a break. We'll give you time to write that letter, and we'll be back for our last go-around with our terrific panel. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Malcolm... Malcolm, I'm sorry. Let's try it again.
Vericarious
Kelly and Jim Henwer. We thank you all very much. We will be right back, and again, we welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. We'll return after this short break.
Are you coming on to someone new? I needed somewhere to hang my head without your news. You gave me something that I didn't have.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Last call on the letters panel at WAMC.org. panel@WAMC.org. So let us talk for a moment while we have about 15 minutes left. Just a programming note that Governor Cuomo will be giving part four. I believe this is the final part. Is this the grand finale? I think it is. Of the State of the State address. That will be happening at 11:30 this morning, and we'll be airing that live as it happens. So, last call on the letters panel at WAMC.org. Let's move on to some other stories that are somewhat related. We haven't talked a lot about Joe Biden. There's an article in the New York Times today I thought we would focus on for a moment. As his predecessor is impeached, Biden tries to stay above the fray. The president-elect has long tried to keep from being sucked into President Trump's dramas. He may find that posture hard to maintain when he takes office and the Senate puts Mr. Trump on trial. Alan, that's one thing that has really impressed me over the last several weeks of how Joe Biden has seemed to have handled all of this while other Democrats have had, you know, rage and have been screaming and yelling, rightfully so. Biden has been the calm in the storm. What do you make of that, and how do you maintain that after you put your hand on the Bible on the 20th of January?
Well, obviously, Biden knows that he has this huge agenda to get passed. He's got to take care of COVID. It's going to be more than any human being could possibly handle. He's got to make sure that the economy gets steaming again, and that's going to be very difficult. There are those people who may be somewhat conspiratorial who believe that, you know, by opening this up to an impeachment, McConnell and others, an impeachment conviction, are basically taking all the progressive stuff that Biden has to do off the table and tying his hands. Biden knows it, obviously. So what he's saying is, let's, he knows that the Democrats are screaming for blood. So he's saying, okay, if you want to do it, you can do it, but you have to do these other things also. Look, Biden has conducted himself beautifully during all of this. Trump looks more and more like a madman. Biden looks like the adult in the room. And I'm sure that you can count on him to continue to do what he's been doing all along.
Rosemary?
Yeah, I mean, again, my idol Nancy Pelosi showed during the last impeachment that you can do two things at one time. They get a lot of money; they can handle two big projects, do COVID and economy, and also deal with a trial. There are ways to do that, and I think Biden has been remarkably smart in delegating going after Trump to other than himself. He stays above the fray. Nancy, Chuck, and maybe Merrick Garland will handle it from here on in. That's exactly the way it should be done. He's not going to be tweeting about it. He's not going to be making comments about his predecessor. He will stay above the fray. It helps him, again, to look like the adult in the room. I think it's the right way to do it.
Jim?
I agree. You know, I think the interesting thing is Biden was talking unity, and you just saw all these Republicans, I want to say parroting, but I'm looking for a word that means, you know, almost turning it on its head, but saying, you know, you're calling for unity and you're doing this. I'm sorry?
Appropriate.
appropriating. That's a much better word. Fomenting. But anyway, now I can't remember what I was saying. I've got all these words in my head. No, so again,
join the club.
That, you know, I think that Biden, you know, there are things that the Congress can do very quickly, because if they fall under economic terms, they can be moved with just a majority. They could get the stimulus checks out. They can do some of these things. I think that, you know, there are some traps that have already been set for Biden. I'm sure we'll talk about those once we get past some of the stuff about COVID and things like that. But I think by and large, the right thing for him to do is stay above the fray, keep people focused on getting through COVID and getting the economy back online. And I think that, you know, he's doing a very good job of keeping on track, as Alan said. So I absolutely agree with Alan on this one.
Vera?
Yeah, well, I mean, I would agree with what everybody on the panel said, that in essence, Biden is focused on peeling off Trump supporters who may have been, Obama voters who lost confidence and are confused and are hoping to find, those kinds of voters to call them back into the fold, or try to reach them through economic programs that might sponsor small businesses and work on the coronavirus immunization campaign and address some of these fundamental problems that have not been resolved, including issues related to border questions, immigration. I mean, there are many, many big topics that haven't been appropriately addressed for decades. And I think that's Biden's opportunity to give direction to the country rather than focus on, calling Trump to the carpet. That's somebody else's job, not his.
All right. Anybody else? Okay. Let's go to a couple of letters before we end this morning. Oh, a muted cuckoo. I like that. We go to...
I forgot to put my mute button on. I told you JP taught me about mute buttons on my phone, and I thought I had it on, but I have to
No, it's
all
okay.
The time.
No, but it wasn't as loud this time. You must be farther away. So, let's see. Lynn writes about Biden and says, "Wow, a president who actually may do as he stated. Biden proclaimed, 'Whether you voted for me or not, I will be the president to all.' He needs to dial down the rhetoric. Rosemary nailed it and summed it up. The adult in the room." Let's see. I was stunned, though of course shouldn't have been, that in the midst of yesterday's violence condemning speech, Trump said, "I cannot emphasize that there must be no violence, no law breaking, and no vandalism." Am I the only one who noticed the omission of the word "enough" with its implied contradiction to the rest of the message?
I mean, all his videos are inauthentic, to be honest. He follows temporarily what his advisors, whoever remains still in the, within the space of Trump provides him with. He goes out, releases a video, and then an hour later we hear he regrets it. And I mean, it's just not authentic what is being released in these videos. And it's just language given to him by advisors. And of course, it's not what, when we pay close attention, his voice, his mannerisms, and the omission of certain words indicate what he really believes and what he stands for.
Barbara writes, Rosemary. Go ahead.
I was going to just say, I loved the video. It was inauthentic is a good word, Vera. I mean, he did not mention impeachment or Joe Biden or transfer of power. It was just a remarkable performance. I mean, really, this is going to end up a textbook case of whatever his disability is that we have yet to address.
Well, there were questions yesterday to many of the presidential historians in residence at the various cable networks last night of, was that his farewell address? Which I thought was an interesting point. Like, is that it? Is that the legacy in 5 minutes, 4 minutes and 48
doesn't
seconds?
Doesn't quite measure up to Eisenhower, does it?
No, a little bit different.
Let's see. Brian says, hey, I'm surprised I haven't heard you talk at all today about the financial pressure being put on Republicans. I think we did, and we certainly did yesterday, but I take the point. It seems like a very good reason for Republicans to distance themselves from Trump. Alan, you want to talk about that?
No.
Well, no, I think that there is this internal fight between the professionals in the Republican Party and the 60 or 70% I've seen both reported today that are sticking with them. Now, if you want to be a Republican politician and you want to stay in office, you better take cognizance of that, even if you are a prostitute, a political prostitute, and know full well, and they do, I'm convinced of that, that this is a crazy man and that they have no business supporting him, but they want to stay in office, they want their tombstone to say senator or congressman, and they are not going to give it up because they know the truth is that all of those people, as I have said before, left over from the Civil War continuum, are out there.
Let's see. We go to a couple of people are writing in saying that his quote unquote farewell address came off as a hostage video. Another one says that
I have no doubt about that. I have no doubt. Somebody said to him, if you don't want to get impeached, you do that. You don't want to get convicted. You better do this.
Yeah.
Maybe the congressional members with guns came over, stood at the other end of the room and say, look, talking to the camera and say the words on the screen. Okay, we only have about 2 minutes here, so let me try to get we have a lot of letters. So are you aware that eruption of violence are occurring in other state capitals and what is being done about this? Well, obviously, we've talked a lot about the concern throughout this country at state capitals. The big question is, what is being done about this? We've heard of plans here in New York State. I think other states have recorded their plans and have talked about what they're doing. But it is a scary prospect, Alan, as you mentioned at the beginning of the program.
Yeah, and there is an FBI warning out. What was said to us at the university was you're strongly advised to stay home this weekend, which, given COVID, we're already...
Yeah, where else are we going? Right.
Yeah.
Let's see. We go to... Joel, who says, what mechanisms are in place to preclude Big Orange and his sycophants from doling out tens of thousands of dollars in bribes to committed Democratic delegates to change their allegiances? Well, we've won, but that would be, when would that happen? I don't understand that, but okay.
I don't get the letter.
Joseph writes, if you were TV execs, would you take a Trump request for time to address the nation? That's a great question.
Oh, you know, I would.
Yeah, I would, too. Rosemary? I think she's on mute.
Boy, that's hard.
She's on mute.
Yeah, there you go.
I think I would. I wouldn't leave it that way. I would ask what was the nature of the speech, and I would reserve the right to jump in if he starts spewing election fraud lies again. I would say yes, but with limitations.
Let's see. And this one is another speculative question from Dan, who says, panel, we only have about a minute, but panel, please speculate. Trump's a commie. He has divided us, the Republican Party, and appears to be bankrupting America. I can't wait with my neighbors only so long. What you going to do when democracy runs over you? So I don't know what we're supposed to speculate on. Yeah. Well, there you go. We'll end with a whimper this morning. I want to thank everybody for being with us. I saw the subject line was tantalizing, and then unfortunately it just sort of went downhill from there. I want to thank everybody who did write in. We thank you for your thoughts.
Sometimes it's nice when
you make a point. Those are good.
I wanted to thank J. Alfred Prufrock.
And why not? Good. Thanks to everybody. Alan, thank you very much.
Okay.
Rosemary, Jim, and Vera, thank you. We'll be right back.